Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami.
So a couple nights ago, Ajahn Yatiko gave a very lovely summary of the Four Noble Truths. I thought I'd just continue on that theme. Sariputta compared the teaching on the Four Noble Truths to the footprint of an elephant, say as a simile or as an image, the elephant's footprint being the largest footprint of all animals, and then any other footprint of an animal could fit in that, within that footprint. And similarly, for the teaching on the Four Noble Truths, this is a teaching that, say, all other teachings of the Buddha or any other expositions of truth can fit within this teaching on the Four Noble Truths. It encompasses everything, really. The First Noble Truth of dukkha, dukkha being suffering, unsatisfactoriness, stress, dis-ease, many different ways of translating it. Cause of dukkha, the cessation or ending of dukkha, and the path leading to the cessation of dukkha. The nature of the Buddha's teachings is such that what he's really trying to get us to do is to investigate and to look closely at our experience. That investigation of dukkha, taking an interest in it, looking at it closely, is not a morbid preoccupation or a source of being miserable. But if one is looking at it appropriately, one is just looking at what really needs to be paid attention to. A comparison that is made is that in the same way that the Buddha asks us to look at dukkha and assess it clearly, similar to if one goes to a doctor or a doctor asks you what... where does it hurt? Where is the problem? It's not a morbid preoccupation to tell the doctor clearly or to understand for oneself clearly, what's the difficulty? What's the problem? Where does it actually hurt? Where is that difficulty? What's its cause? And how to deal with it. I mean, one can only really embark on a path of, or a method of looking after oneself and treating oneself in a way that leads to wellness by recognizing clearly what the problem is, what the difficulty is. So that if we look at our experience in a similar way that a doctor does, treating the symptoms, treating the symptoms of our disease in a skillful and appropriate way, then one has the one can establish the hope of living in well-being, and so it's not a it's not really a strange thing. I mean, obviously, one can get obsessed with one's illnesses, or imagine one's illnesses, or invest huge amounts of energy on telling other people about your. It's like the when you say the organ recital, that is is oftentimes the ways that especially older people go on about their perception of themselves, but that you know, that's clearly kind of self-obsessed, and usually is a real irritation for a doctor. But if somebody comes to a doctor and really clearly lays it out, and then the patient is able to get a clear prescription of what to do, then there's that possibility of being free from illness. So that dukkha is something that we need to know. We need to understand, and so to be able to look at it in that way, in a balanced, clear way, without getting self-obsessed and being stuck in cycles of dukkha. And of course, there's actually, when we reflect on the nature of dukkha, the Buddha points to the different manifestations of dukkha, in the sense that there's one kind of dukkha he says is just very natural, normal, ordinary, dukkha. It's dukkha because it actually is dukkha. Means you have some kind of illness, disease, pain, discomfort in different ways, and you look after that in a particular way. Say if one has a cut or something, then I mean that's a natural kind of dukkha that you treat with keeping it clean and putting medicine on and covering the wound. And it will heal over time. And it's kind of ordinary, sort of dukkha, and to be able to recognize that the different types of dukkha need to be dealt with in different ways, so that sense of if one has a cut, has a wound, then one needs to. One can't just ignore it, treat it as if it doesn't exist, one has to take care of it, so that some kinds of either physical or mental pain, they're rather ordinary, and one doesn't have to feel that there's some sort of problem because it is painful, because by any standard it actually is painful. It's just there's looking after it so that it doesn't, we don't build an identification around it, we don't exacerbate it, we patiently look after it in the same way that, as I say, one has a wound, one washes it, keeps it clean, puts the medicine on, puts a bandage over it, and over time it will heal. It's the nature of the body to heal. The other kind, another kind of dukkha is the what's called viparinama dukkha, and it's the dukkha of separation, so the separation from the loved, separation from happiness, separation from that which has been. Familiar and pleasing to us. That is a kind of dukkha. Again, it's natural, but it's important to recognize that it would need to be treated in a different way, and approaching that kind of dukkha in ways that we are attentive to reflecting on the nature of arising and ceasing, the nature of our relationships with people and the circumstances around us, or even when we think of separation, these are obviously mixed to a certain degree. I'm thinking of, the pain and discomfort of maybe sickness or aging. But then there's also the dukkha of separation from one's familiarity with ease and comfort, or being able to do things in a particular way, and then that changes, and we're separated from that. So being able to similarly, see, it's a natural form of dukkha. It's an experience that everybody comes across or will come across, and to be able to, it's not to be shocked or dismayed by that. There is the experience of dukkha, but it's also we can work with that. We can find ways of alleviating dukkha, not just by distracting ourselves or into something else that is pleasurable, or exacerbating the dukkha by feeling resentful of separation from the well-being and happiness, or separation from the loved, but recollection of the naturalness of being a human being and experiencing these different aspects of dukkha. I remember one time walking with Ajahn Chah in Wat Bapong, Ajahn Chah's monastery. We were over in the nun section, and we were with the parents of one of the monks. One of the monks was visiting, so we were. He was taking them for a walk. I was with them, going for a walk around Wat Bapong, and then we're walking in the nun section, and he was saying that his mother had just recently passed away. It was a few months before that, and her body was being kept, and there were preparations being made for the cremation ceremony, and it was going to be a big ceremony for that. But how he put it was my mother passed away, and she lived here as a nun she was the head nun at Wat Bapong, and now she's gone, and now I'm an orphan, which is, you know, it's a very sweet way of, yeah, well, you know, even as a big teacher, his mother had been there all his life, and then she was gone, and now, I mean, the way he said it was, I mean, it was both his own feeling of loss, but then it wasn't said in a sad way. It was sort of, imagine that. Here I am, 60 years old, now I'm an orphan. So it was a lovely expression of again, nature and the nature of dukkha. The other kind of dukkha that the Buddha pointed to was called sankhara dukkha, which is say the suffering that arises through things being of a compounded nature. Sankhara, in this sense, being, you know, that which is formed, that which is compounded, that which is constructed, that which is created, and in its very nature, you know, there's going to be dukkha, or the experience of some kind of suffering, that which is unsatisfactory, some stress involved in the fact that there is an inherent complications, because whether it's on the material realm or the mental realm, everything is put together with different component parts, and they're going to change and shift in different ways, so that you think in terms of one's own physical body, just by its very nature, whether one's young or whether one's older, there's a certain heaviness and difficulty of carrying around a bundle of constructed material things of a body, even if you're in really good health and have all sorts of energy and vigor, it still is a kind of a burden. It's a complication. So that because things are, if it's of a constructed nature, it's also changing. So it's there's a certain certain burden. So that it's not always easeful. So say even if you're in really good health, you still have to sleep. You still have to go to the toilet. You still have to eat. It makes things more complicated. Human relations are always more complicated, just because if you have many different people, you have many different views or actions, and it's constructed. So there's effort needed to maintain relationships, and that's not a bad thing. We just have to develop the skills so that to work with that, and to be realistic and to be caring and to be sensitive. But that takes effort as well. So that there's a certain tension that needs to be. We need to be watchful and careful of, so that we're not finding ourselves in dukkha. What comes to mind, similarly with one time walking around the monastery with Ajahn Chah, with visitors, just the things of a constructed nature and how things get, the complication, sankhara dukkha, complication, the dukkha of complication. We're at Ajahn Chah's monastery. In those days, the early days, the tallest structure in the monastery was a bell tower, and it's quite, it's probably 3-4 stories high, cement structure with nice kind of cement workings on it, and then a bell is up on top, and there's windows all around so the sound can go out. But anyway, we're walking with this group, and I was there. And somebody, the visitor asked, what's this structure? And because it was ornate and it was large, and Ajahn Chah, rather than saying, oh, this is a bell tower, Ajahn Chah says, oh, this is the kitchen fund. And the visitor asked, what? And so then he explained. He said, well, as the number of monks and nuns increased at Wat Bopong over these recent years, people were worried and concerned, because some days there might be enough food, there might not be enough food, so people were really concerned. So they put together a kitchen fund and made offerings, and the kitchen fund was established, and then there's a group of people who are put in charge of looking after the kitchen fund, and then the kitchen fund was established, and then people started to argue about how the kitchen fund, who should be used, and should people started to have all sorts of views and opinions, what should be done, shouldn't be done, suspicions, complications, and he said, and so I decided to just take the kitchen fund and build this and be done with it. So, Wat Bapong, this is the kitchen fund, and there, it's now a bell tower, and we just rely on whatever food shows up on that day, and that's enough. So, sankhara dukkha. The things are of a compounded nature. You have many different elements come together, and there's inevitably going to be some dissonance or difficulty. So whether it's on a just on a material, physical level, whether it's on a social level, whether it's on a mental level, emotional level, when things have many components and they're compounded, there needs to be a certain care and carefulness, because its drift is towards dukkha. So that and it's not strange or weird or even problematic, but we actually have to be skillful in learning how to deal with that. So that's the teachings of the Buddha are, and particularly these Four Noble Truths, are really there to give us the opportunity to have the tools to work within those natural parameters of being subject to dukkha, and of course that's what wisdom is the clear seeing, the discernment to understand the nature of the world around us, the nature of the phenomena, the nature of our own minds and the way we react, so that we don't complicate. We don't make problems out of it. We don't create suffering. So there is a natural kind of, dukkha that arises, and then there's what we add to it, what we pile on, actually. So that learning how to not pile on the dukkha, and that's where the elements of letting go, of relinquishment, of putting down are really important. But that relinquishment and letting go has to come through clear seeing. Without that clear seeing, then we tend to just to let go, push away, try to disregard the things that we don't like and don't want to experience. So coming back to the image of the doctor, if one doesn't understand the nature of the pain or that one's experiencing, either through disregarding it or not being able to see it clearly, it can get quite complicated. I think of one of the monks here last year who was sick, wasn't well, and it was hard to recognize the nature of the pain and discomfort he was experiencing, and then the doctors didn't see it really clearly at first, but it wasn't until they actually really opened him up and operated and said, "Oh, it's no wonder you're in some discomfort. Your appendix is burst, and this is really dangerous. That was this is a problem." So that recognizing clearly, discerning the nature of the dukkha that we experience, so that we can deal with it properly, looking at it as a a symptom of the illness that we're treating, to be able to look after ourselves. So that the Buddha, when he spoke or compared, to understand these Four Noble Truths, he's very categorical. Without understanding these Four Noble Truths, that somebody could come to a complete cessation and freedom from suffering, it's impossible. You know, so that without being able to really see clearly, penetrate them, and work with them in the appropriate way, is really not able to. One would not be able to really free oneself. So, and he said, in the same way, if someone were to say that they would build the higher stories of a gabled building, without bothering to build the foundation and the lower story of it, that would be impossible. It's not in the nature of reality for that to work. It's how nature works. So that the that sense of getting those foundations well laid and skillfully put in place. So the same with the teachings of if we're looking for well-being and happiness, and yeah, we need to put those causes and conditions in place. These Four Noble Truths are not something that it's good to not make it too theoretical, too philosophical, too externalized. The teachings of the Buddha are really, when we chant, that recollecting the quality of open aiko, leading inwards. It's the nature of the teachings to lead inwards and experience it within ourselves, and to finding the resolution of the problems or difficulties within, or the source of truth within. And one of the great forest monks, disciple of Ajahn Mun, he had his own formulation of the Four Noble Truths, which I think is very, very simple, very practical, and more about the internal experience. So that he formulated it in the way that he switched the Four Noble Truths around a little bit, rather than the first Noble Truth being the truth of dukkha, the second Noble Truth being the cause of dukkha. Then he kind of switched it, because of the cause of dukkha is the mind going outside itself. The result of the mind going outside itself is dukkha. the cause of the say the cessation of dukkha is the mind seeing the mind clearly. The result of the mind seeing the mind clearly is the cessation of dukkha. So it's this simple formulation that bringing our attention inwards, experiencing things within the heart, within this body-mind complex, within ourselves, and recognizing, yeah, whenever the mind is just goes off in some kind of fantasy or some wish for the world to be a certain way or circumstances to not be that way, it's like there's a movement external, movement outside, movement towards something that should or shouldn't be in a certain way, moving towards something that one wants or doesn't want, and that the natural result of that is the cause of dukkha, that is discontent, dissatisfaction, dis-ease, stress, suffering in different ways, and then the cause of the ending of dukkha is that, yeah, the mind seeing the mind, the heart seeing the heart, and that experience of a clear recognition of, oh, this is the nature of things. It's like this. And its result is a peace and a non-complication of our being, freedom from suffering. I think it's an important aspect in terms of when we think of freedom from suffering, it isn't that we have to sort of go around and stamp out all the suffering, annihilate suffering everywhere. It's actually paying attention to the experience of when we say the mind seeing the mind, the heart being content within itself, is in itself the end of suffering. Because it isn't looking for anything else. It isn't needing anything else. It isn't reacting out of fear or negativity toward anything. It is clear and present within itself. And that's the foundations for the experience of the ending of suffering. So that learning how to work with these Four Noble Truths, learning how to use them as tools, you're learning how to develop skill with them, and it's all, the opportunity for working is just in this body-mind experience. It isn't anywhere else. To offer that for reflection this evening. Sadhu karam dharma se sa.